Hey, we all love to go out to eat, but do we ever think what happens behind the kitchen doors? What's it like running one of these restaurants? That's what we talk about each and every week with our famed chef, Pascal. 30 years, he had the famous Pascal's restaurant here at South Coast Plaza, and through that got to meet many famous people, and we're going to talk about that here today. What it's like to serve celebrities. From a celebrity himself, Chef Pascal, welcome, sir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me and letting me talk about a special moment of my career. Because, of course, cooking is one thing, but also having guests appreciate your food. But also, I'm very happy when we have a celebrity. They just show up at the door, or I cook for, or I do a catering for. And so through the last 40 years of my career, I have a little list of quite well-known people, including Brigitte Bardot.
Brigitte Bardot. That's what prompted this today. The late, great Brigitte Bardot obviously passed away. She was in her 90s, I think, or something. I don't remember how old she was.
She was born in 1934.
Oh, 1934, okay. And so anyway, to an aging baby boomer like me, was there anybody more beautiful? After Marilyn Monroe in the 50s, there was Brigitte Bardot in the 60s.
Yeah. She was an icon of beauty, but young, very young. I think she had a few scenes before her 20s.
Yeah.
She'd been already recognized. And then she
disappeared. Retired, pulled back, whatever.
No. Before that, we're not there yet.
Oh, okay. All right.
There's a lot going on between that time she became known, and then the main thing that make actually Saint-Tropez what it is now.
Yes.
Because she wasn't. She created that buzz of Saint-Tropez being. Mm-hmm. Star place to go and jet society. And so on the beach in Saint-Tropez, or it's called the beach of Ramatel, la plage de Ramatel, there was a little hunt restaurant, and they filmed a movie there with Mr. Vadim. And
Roger Vadim, who later discovers another beauty known as Jane Fonda.
Yeah. Right. And so they were married in 1956 or something like that. And they created this movie called God Created Woman.
That was the sensation that just sent her skyrocketing.
Thank God. And of course, Brigitte Bardot had to be the goddess too. And so, from that little hunt, they were filming that place right on the beach, and they were not actually filming some scenes, but also feeding the crew. And the crew were there just more to eat at the beach. And from feeding the crew, once the movie came out, there was a boom. They said, oh, so they decided to call that place, who was a little hunt before, Club 55, because it was 1955. And then Saint-Tropez just exploded right after that.
Now, you were born and raised in Normandy, which is obviously over on the English Channel, the scene of all the World War II battles and invasion of Normandy and all that. How did you get down to the south of France? Why did you go there? Why didn't you go to Paris or other places to cook?
It's been, I'm sure, it's still most of it. But the thing is, when you live in the north of France in the summer, you jump in your car and you drive 1,000 kilometers down south.
To the sun.
To the sun. That's it, on the Mediterranean. So we move away from a rainy area on colder summer, colder winter, to a nice place, and when you can smell the lavender.
And so many places that are legendary in our minds. Monaco, which is a separate country, but right there, Monaco, Nice.
Nice, Bandol.
Cannes, where the film festival is. So why Saint-Tropez? Because it wasn't really until she came along, that she put that on the map there.
Saint-Tropez became a little bit like a little hideaway on the Riviera, and a good stop for boating, the sailboat on big yachts.
Big yacht stuff, clearly,
Start to come there. And it's a pretty village, actually. It hasn't changed much. And there's a little houses, a little tag, just a few streets. And right on the water, on a nice little harbor. And it's like in Cannes, actually. There's a long walkway wherever the yachts are.
Out on a jetty or a peninsula or something, yeah.
Yeah, it's a long waterboard right there, and people watch.
Yeah.
Drive who owned the yacht, is a Jackie Onassis, all these people just came by.
So here's a young chef. Was this your first assignment, first place you were cooking a real chef at, or had you worked at other places?
Well, actually, I was not cooking. That's the only part of the story.
Okay.
I came from Lyon. In Lyon, I worked in the 3- and 2-star Michelin, and Paul Bocuse on Lyon.
Famous Paul Bocuse. Yeah. Go look him up.
And so I got exposed already to some jet set customer on celebrity singers.
Yeah, and coming into famous restaurants.
Exactly. And so I really enjoyed that. Actually, my first really famous dinner I served, and was with another group of culinary students, we served at the Royal Court of Belgium in Brussels.
The Royal Court of Belgium.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. That's
and we
deal.
Served the king and queen and all the head of state of European Union, because that was the day they signed the European Union.
Oh, the European Union?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I was one of the servers that was serving that celebrate. That
what does it feel like? Come on, you're a little kid from a little town.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're in the court of the kings here.
Well, they dressed me up as a valet.
Sure,
with all the thing, and the bow on my shoes.
Bow on your shoes,
yes,
of course.
Everything. And then you have somebody at the end of the table. You walk with sign, and all. You have to, every year, to put the plate down at the same time, pick it up at the same time, and then they clap, and then boom, you go. Very special.
Like a movie, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Fairy tale.
And so that was my first experience to celebrity. And after that, when I moved on to Lyon at Paul Bocuse, I served famous people. I don't know if a lot of people do. A famous singer called Johnny Hallyday.
That one I don't know. No,
Johnny Hallyday was the number one then crooner in France.
In France.
Yeah.
The Elvis of France.
He was the own Elvis. Yeah, he was the own Elvis. And then the other people that I met there. And then I went to another restaurant, 2-star Michelin, Leon de Lyon. And there I was a server. And I served, the most famous person I served there was Orson.
Oh, Orson. We'll stop for that. This is really about Brigitte Bardot because she passed away.
Yeah.
And you knew her and served her numerous times. And I just thought that's too good a story to let lay here. But you got to tell me, Orson, there's another iconic person, big personality, big person.
But this is when I really appreciate to be able to take care of these celebrities. Because Orson Welles came for lunch one day, and then on his way out, he told the owner of the restaurant, "Say, I won't come back tomorrow, but I want Pascal to be my
server." Really? He must have. He was quite a, as you could tell by his size, he was no slouch when it came to eating. He said he loved to eat, and so he became a big man. But he really appreciated fine food and
totally,
fine dining.
Totally, and we had some conversation. It was very nice, very jovial, And then I moved down to Saint-Tropez, and I was hired in the Club 55. And the reason I was able to get a little connected, not that much, but with Brigitte Bardot.
Because she would recognize you, and you'd say hello and welcome. And
yeah, of course, but she was very discreet.
That's what she was like Greta Garbo, another famous actress of an early era.
Yeah.
When her fame got too big, she pulled back.
Yeah, I'm a little bit protective of celebrities, like even at the club, 55, who was owned by a family called de Colmont, Patrice and Jean de Colmont created that monster celebrity restaurant. And they will never call a paparazzi to come take picture.
That's one of the things we're going to talk about. In addition to whatever recollections, I'm just a geek. I got to hear some of the recollections of Brigitte and Brigitte Bardot. And I'll tell you some of my fantasies or stories as a young boy of she was just like the ultimate icon. Oh my goodness, Raquel Welch, Brigitte Bardot, the most beautiful women in the world. But I, as many years when I was younger, was an entertainment publicist, a celebrity publicist, a press agent, and handled and worked with many very famous people. Anthony Quinn, Jose Feliciano, Johnny Mathis, and whatnot through the years. So I have an insight into what it's like to work with celebrities. And it can be demanding. They can be difficult. Mm-hmm. But they can also be very generous and very, it's some sort of magic that floats around them. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, it's the two sides of that. Some, they want to brag about who's coming.
Absolutely. They build their whole reputation on who was seen here.
They use it as an advertising. My way to advertise, when a celebrity comes, they're coming because I keep them
private
and in a peace place.
And that's really what they're looking for. They're looking to step out of the spotlight and just enjoy their life.
Exactly. Yeah. And after I put them up front, when everybody's going to see them, I like to see them in a way back corner and on their leg. Most of them, you know, because of that, come back. Even my restaurant was in Newport Beach. But I had celebrities driving from Marina del Rey, from Los Angeles.
Oh, and there's certainly many celebrities that still live in Orange County here. They like the lifestyle. Yes. They live quietly down in Laguna or Newport or someplace.
So Brigitte Bardot, to go back to her.
Tell me the first time you remember you saw her. She walks in the room. Because you had to be wild like we all were. This is Brigitte Bardot.
When I met her, she was not at the Club Saint Gonsin because there was too many people there. You know, people who have gone crazy. The Club Saint Gonsin had a sister restaurant open for dinner in town, Saint-Tropez, called Chez Palmyre. And it was a very small, quaint place. And so she went there just quietly.
Because she lived in Saint-Tropez?
Right there. If you are in the center of that little village, I forgot there's a name in Italy, the local bit less same. But you take a little street, a little chemin, or they call it a road in France, but it's a chemin. And then at the end of the road, then you're almost on the beach, then you have the little gate on the right, and very discreet, you couldn't even see the house she was living way in the back.
Yeah.
And right there on the beach.
And I'm always amazed, if you go up to Beverly Hills or other places, some celebrities are strange. I can say this from personal experience going out to places. Sometimes they want to go and be seen. So you have places up in Beverly Hills. I still like that, but was for years the Polo Lounge at the Beverly Hills Hotel. Yeah. And you knew there were going to be celebrities there. And they went in expecting to see other celebrities. And they were some of the biggest gawkers. I can tell you, big celebrities I went with who would start telling me, oh, look who's over there, look who's over there. I'm like, everybody's looking at you.
Yeah.
But you're looking around to judge and see who else is in the room and stuff here. They're just as guilty as everybody else.
It's to see and to be seen.
To see and be seen. And then there are clearly restaurants that they go to because nobody makes a fuss. And they go sit in the back quietly, and they get their favorite food, the Sinatra kind of Rat Pack out in Palm Springs, the legendary places they would go, and nobody knew they were there. They snuck in and snuck out.
And hopefully, because most of these restaurants had a lot of banquette seating.
Yes.
You talk loud enough to make sure that the producer in the back know you want to be a... Do you want to be an actor?
But there were times they were doing, honest to God, to go out and see and be seen, and somebody say, oh, is he still alive? Is she still working? Oh, yeah, I forgot about them. Or to the up-and-comers to be seen in the crowd, I loved going to, I went to New York sometimes on junkets or with press tours with people.
Yeah.
We'd get them on Good Morning America or something like that. And to go to some of the famous places like Sardi's.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming Sardi's is still there. But right next to the Broadway playhouses, and they would come in You'd come in after the play was over, and if it had just premiered, everybody would politely applaud. And, and you had your celebrity, those sketches they had, like they did at the Brown Derby for years.
They signed the wall.
All over the wall. So there they wanted to clearly be part of the scene. So many times, if you were handling celebrities, as that's what they say, handling them, protecting them, you knew when they wanted to be seen and when they wanted to be private.
Well, also, you have to be discreet. This is why, you know, I was not sure I would talk about my,
celebrities. You're still uncomfortable. You're still protective all these years later. She passed away, but you're still preserving these things.
I like to be very protective of their privacy. But I'm going to tell you a few of them.
All right. And here's another thing. There's always an impulse to take pictures with a celebrity to say, look, particularly in today's world, the social media world.
Yeah.
I wish I had many famous celebrities I met, some of the greats, Gregory Peck, Jimmy Stewart, all these people. And I refused to have my picture taken because that was gauche. That was below me. I'm part of the inside crowd. I'm not supposed to be. If you're part of their crowd working around them, their agents, their managers, you're serving them dinner, you're doing something, you're supposed to treat them just as average people.
I'm exactly the same.
Yeah.
And I don't ask them to sign anything for me.
Take a picture.
And sometimes I regret, but that's how it is. And no picture and nothing on the wall, even though some of them did sign my wall. But so,
because I always found the best way to deal with celebrities is not to gawk, but to just treat them as ordinary people. Yeah. You recognize, yes, hi, welcome, I appreciate your films, or whatever quick comment you want to say, if you say anything. But to treat them, and I would joke with them and laugh with them and stuff, and then people would be shocked. Oh, you're speaking up. You don't have to be servile. You don't have to be a servant. Mm-hmm. Appreciate if you just talk to them like a regular person.
And what they make give you value. Well, that's, we are serving you. We take care of you and respect you. But so the main thing I with Brigitte Bardot was in 19...
Just when you say it, Brigitte Bardot, I go,
No, in France, in France we used to call her BB.
Yes, BB.
Bébé.
She was a national icon. She was a treasure.
Oh, yeah, totally. And in 1984, she fainted a little bit, or the year, because our birthday was in September.
Says you. I don't know when her birthday was. She never told me when her birthday was.
I think that was the 18th or the 28th of September. But where I work at Club 55, the owner, Patrice de Colmont, came to me and said, Pascal, because I was doing celebrity catering at their homes in the villas and say, okay, you're going to do a catering for Brigitte Bardot's 50th birthday.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Goodness.
Everybody was very excited. The kitchen, the service staff, everybody. And suddenly around 4 o'clock, the owner came back to me and said, oh, it's been canceled.
Oh.
She has decided to not celebrate her 50th birthday because I didn't want people to know that she was turning 50.
Yeah, that's a hard age if you're a beauty queen, right? Yeah.
So that was my last chance.
That was it. You could have gone up and catered Brigitte. But she came in the restaurant, and did she recognize you? Did you say, welcome, how are you?
No. I saw her only once at Palmyre. She was very gracious. But she also, at that time, she was more public. She used to go shop at the farmer's market, like once a week.
Amazing. And there
farmer's
are,
bag. And
there are communities like that, like Beverly Hills, where you can walk around and people won't follow the stuff. They notice you, but they leave you alone. And then there are communities that people would just go gaga in a drunk crowd or something.
And very on board, because you could see, could not say, oh, this is Brigitte when she was driving. But she was driving a car called Mary. It's a little Citroën that looked like a mini Jeep. Would you call it
I know what you mean, a moped type of thing? Like open seat.
A gun, like golf cart type, and very special, 2 horsepower, very small engine, and was all one piece of basically plastic, the whole thing. with two holes on the bottom for the rain, so it can be anywhere.
The rain can go
through. That cow never rust. So she was having that, and she usually, because she, of course we all know she loved dogs and cats, but she drove around with her dogs in the back.
Now, was she a vegetarian? Because she was clearly into animal rights. That's what she devoted most of her life.
She man to have no meat on the plate.
Yeah,
thanks. Say vegetarian or vegan, like that, said no meat on the plate. Because she was an activist to protect the way we raise animals, even in farm. She banned hunting.
Yeah.
And we used...
quite a vocal activist. She'd show up at public hearings and use whatever celebrity she had to draw attention to this. And
they have hunting laws changed because of her. They have a lot of way to raise animals, new laws because of her. And no fur, also the fur.
Yes,
because at that time, people used to wear seal fur, seals.
Right.
And then so she banned that.
Which was horrible. They would belt these baby seals over the head.
Yeah.
They'd bat in them over the head to get the baby.
Oh, terrible. The cruelty, unbelievable. Right. And she had to do that, not just in France, but worldwide.
Yeah. So I'll tell you my little bridge. I never met Brigitte Bardot, clearly, but I did meet many celebrities. But there was a movie. I had to pull it up here. It was called Dear Brigitte. You would not know this. 1965, with Jimmy Stewart and Brigitte Bardot. It was a comedy, and starring Billy Mummy, who was on Lost in Space and a very famous child actor of that whole period, and why I somehow must have related to him. He's about my age, must be. And he falls in love and sends a love letter to Brigitte Bardot, and he's 12 or something.
Oh, wow.
And somehow she comes to visit him, and that's the movie ensues and all this crazy stuff, because she responds to this letter.
Oh, that's fun.
That he writes this letter. So that, to me, just cemented her as a good person, the unapproachable idol who reaches down, and this little boy's captivated, as was I.
Yeah.
Everybody, every modern American male. I'm getting choked up talking about it here.
Maybe it was you.
Maybe it was me, yeah.
That could have been you.
It could have been me. Yeah. Brigitte Bardot, sorry.
So from that, I got lucky. And because of my past, when I got hired at the Club 55, at that hub on the beach of all the, it became a hub of celebrity people, stars and singers. And the owner say, Pascal, there's a section there. See, there's a little square in the back, and nobody can cross through it. This is all that my VIP.
Ah,
you're in charge of them. So from that, there was more people than Brigitte Bardot that I saw.
You wrote a list out here. You got a whole long list of people. Just a quick record. Like, rattle off some names.
I can
there.
Say a few. Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson. Oh, that would be cool.
I had a little story. You want to hear it?
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
I'm not going to get in trouble.
Oh.
But when he came before at lunchtime,
and Jack, if you're listening, you're welcome anytime to come to the show here.
Yeah.
Open invitation.
And, you know, sure. If you got out of a boat, went to a little jetty, a wood jetty.
Right. Jetty.
And he looked like he missed his step. He went into the water.
Oh!
So Jack. He came to the table all wet.
Ha!
And so with his big smile, no matter, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It's warm, it's sunny, I'm fine. But suddenly he reached out into his short pants pocket and pulled out a pile of 500 franc bills.
Oh.
They were totally wet. So he removed his sun hat, put the sun hat under his chair, and lined up the bills
out
while you have lunch. And so he was sitting above his cash.
Drying his money, drying his clothes.
So that was very special. And then when he left, he took his money.
That's the amazing thing about celebrities. I've met some casually or bumped into them at different things, And those are the stories we remember. And we tell everybody over and over. I've told a million of these stories, running into them at a grocery line or going someplace mm-hmm. here, serving them, seeing them somewhere here. And I always thought, what a strange world that people are telling stories about meeting Pascal or Paul Roberts. Not me, you probably. Remembering, oh, the day I saw him walking down the street. Oh, the day I saw him, bumped into him here at the supermarket or something here. They leave an impression wherever they go. That's part of the aura that they carry, which I think in today's world, so many of them try and fight. They try and hide. They cover themselves up. They hide themselves. I don't want any recognition. I don't want anybody to do it. I don't know. That's no, isn't that part of mind. The fun of being a celebrity is to
I don't mind
that?
Sometimes people, there's not that many, but sometimes say, are you Chef Pascal?
You Chef Pascal, we go to an event, and these young chefs come over. The one guy talked about working at your restaurant, and afterwards you had to say, you looked at him and said, did I fire you?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Did I remember?
Oh, and then you say, oh, more than one time. Yeah,
exactly. So I think that is, I get it can be a curse, but it's part of the blessing of people recognizing your public. And older celebrities, the ones I knew from the 40s and 50s and 60s, when I worked in the industry, they took that as part of the responsibility, part of what they had to do, to be generous, to sign things. Not every minute, not all the time. Yes, sometimes you want to be left alone. But they didn't run from it. They weren't nasty about it. Today, so many of these young celebrities are mean and nasty. Get out of here. I'm not talking to you. I'm not signing anybody. I'm not doing anything.
Why? It's not only them. Because
this is your public.
But they are publicists and agents.
Yeah.
So the publicists and agents want to direct their public
so
life.
Much. Yeah, there were some famous ones.
Because it's all dangerous.
I could tell stories.
We know, even a few days ago, we know you never know if a celebrity is going to have a bad reaction.
Right.
So you have to be careful.
But the people like Jimmy Stewart that I met, I'll give you my Jimmy Stewart story here. James Stewart, famous, one of the most famous iconic actors of the 40s. Mm-hmm. And so I used to do the UCLA Acting Awards, and we would get these iconic actors to come out and give an award. And part of it, they had to give a little speech about how they got started. So no big deal. They could do this in their sleep. And most of them did. We had Gregory Peck. We had Carl Malden. We had people like that come out, and famous actors at the thing. So I'm the guy backstage handling them and directing them and telling them what to do. And most of them didn't pay 2 cents to attention to me. But Jimmy Stewart sent the package. We always send a package prior. Here's what we expect of you. Here's what we're asking you to do. Please prepare a little anecdote. He calls me up. My secretary answers the phone. She says, I don't know how to tell you this, but Jimmy Stewart's on the line for you. And I'm like, yeah, I thought this is a joke because I had told people I was such a fan of his. And he comes on with that. I'm a terrible accent, but he's like, Mr. Roberts, I'm just looking at your material. He was such a pro. He wanted to get it right. And we're like, we're just thrilled you're showing up. Dude, just wing it. You've done this a million times. But he was such a pro, and he was so gracious that night. He would stand there endlessly, everybody to get their picture taken with him. And I thought, that's old Hollywood. They were trained by the studios. It was a responsibility. They were on stage still, and they had to present themselves to the public. Don't turn people off by being an a-hole or a jerk in real life.
At those time, and I'm not saying it's an ancient time, but it's quite a few decades ago, the only public connection they could have was personal.
That's true, too.
Now, there was no social media.
That's true, too.
So it's very important that you work a relationship.
And it wasn't necessarily the paparazzi buzzing around, take every unflattering picture of you with your stomach hanging out or something here, because it wasn't the supermarket tabloids.
Same in politics. They used to go door to door.
Yeah.
No, they're big advertising.
Yeah, they're much more controlled and they're much more kept away from everybody. I saw that in my era. I was a publicist in the 80s, and that was when they were starting to control celebrity access, and partly for good reasons, but partly I think that lost something. Baseball players. You people go to the baseball stadium, and the guy would come by and sign your baseball on the way out. Now he wants $50. It became a business transaction, and they separated themselves from the public. And I think that was a mistake.
So let's go back to our club, Saint-Gonstant.
All right. Tell me some people who
Brigitte
walked through
Bardot,
the door.
Brigitte Bardot, first place. So some of the celebrity I served there several times.
Some. A few.
A few
that pop into my head.
Yeah. One, George Hamilton.
For who?
George Hamilton.
Oh, George Hamilton, yes. Sometimes I have to hear you say it a couple of times here. George Hamilton, of course, with the eternal suntan.
Yeah, okay. You know why?
No.
When he was there at the Club 55, used to show up late, like at 3 p.m., thing like that, and put his face in one specific table where the sun...
You're kidding. He even had to get sun when he was sitting at the table.
Like at 3 p.m. He didn't want too hard of the sun to protect his skin. And I knew exactly what he wanted to eat. He wanted to have a basket of carrots.
A basket of carrots?
Every day was he eating five, six carrots.
Oh, my goodness. I wonder why.
I say, what do you eat carrots? It's for my tan.
You're kidding. That acts to your tan or something? Because that's what he was known for. That was his look, being super tanned all the time.
And then the owner even made fun of him. Say, George, can you show me the palm of your hands?
Tanto?
They were kind of carrot-like. Very nice guy.
Okay, George Hamilton eating carrots.
And
that's a strange story. Okay.
Yeah. And carrot is good for you.
I didn't think anybody would eat a whole basket of them.
And Petula Clark.
I love Petula Clark. Oh, my goodness.
So
don't sleep in the subway and downtown.
Yeah, that's what she was very famous for.
She was real big in France, too, as I recall, because she could speak her French. I think she was married to a Frenchman, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So she used to be on French TV a lot and in France. Yeah.
And I served a couple of times in Lyon and Saint-Tropez, Jane Birkin.
Jane Birkin, that's another actress.
And her husband, Serge Gainsbourg,
very famous
singer, a music songwriter. And I was kind of a private cater for two well-known book writers, Larry Collins and Dominique Lapierre. They wrote and then there became a movie called Is Paris Burning?
It was Paris Burning. I think I remember that movie.
It's a movie to watch, really special.
Okay.
And they're very nice people. And so that's the most important people I served there. And besides that, there were some other French people.
Which impressed you more, the French celebrities or the American celebrities? Probably the French.
Oh, the French, but the French, very discreet.
Hmm.
And not that the American people that I met were to
show your
show off. Actually, it's very similar. Like when I was at Pascal, I had a good conversation with Quincy Jones.
Quincy Jones?
Yeah.
Now you're impressing me again here. Hey, Quincy. Hey, how's that? Are you going to produce another Michael Jackson Thriller album here?
Yeah. Yeah, he was so nice. And if you didn't know who he was, it doesn't matter. He was very humble and we had normal conversation.
Did you know who he was? Did you recognize him? Because he's a famous record producer.
Yeah.
And he's identifiable, but maybe not an instantly identifiable
person.
Actually,
I was told he was coming. Mm. But he was very nice, and he loved France. I think at that time he was married to a French woman as well. And
he was married to Peggy Lipton for years from the Mod Squad. That was another movie, a TV series I grew up watching.
Yeah. And so it was very special. And we used to come regularly.
To Pascal's?
To Pascal. Brooke Shields.
Brooke Shields?
Yes.
I thought she lived up in Malibu. I saw her once on a beach in Malibu.
She used to come, maybe because she has family down there.
Maybe, yeah.
And she wanted to have a nice little quiet table. And
So do her press people, because we used to do this sometimes, we would call ahead and we would tell you, coming, please put them in some discreet place, or
no,
they would just show up.
They tell you the first time and then you remember.
Because that is one of the benefits of being a celebrity. Every celebrity I've ever said is, what do you like about being a celebrity?
Yeah.
Getting a good table and getting good service. When you're recognized, the line parts and Quincy Jones or Petula Clark or whoever else you're rattling off here, they don't want to just stand there in a long line with 10 people and there's Quincy Jones waiting for a table. That's the one time they flex their muscles and say, hey, it's Quincy Jones here. Oh, right away, Mr. Jones. Yeah. Let's get you in here.
And one that I knew because I recognized mostly his voice, and he used to come regularly, John Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones?
The
voice of Darth Vader.
Yeah, amazing. It was so nice, him and his wife, and I knew they always have a little under the table at a lot. And because I think they came from up north, maybe.
You would think they all live up in Beverly Hills or someplace.
No, not really, more close to Santa Monica.
Or that whole area from Brentwood, yeah. Santa Monica, and Beverly Hills.
But they didn't mind the drive.
And just that's quite a testament to you that they would come all the way down for this food.
Yes, and it was so nice, so nice.
So here's the question I have to ask. So we'll get it back to the theme of the show, what it's like to run restaurants today, be behind the kitchen doors. Is three questions. One, does the staff react? Do you put on a special show? Do you do something better for these people because they're famous, because they're recognized, because you feel like I got to up my game? Or do they just get the same old that everybody else is getting here?
I've never asked for, let's say, oh, let's put caviar on this. And,
put a little special touch on this.
Gold pedal on this. No. I just, if I knew, I'd tell my staff, hey, you have so. And they become proud of it.
That's exactly it.
But being proud, they're going to step up on their own.
Exactly.
To make sure,
everything comes out right to serve.
I don't want to mess it up, and then I can remember for the rest of my life. And one day, I was in a shop next door and busy because it was an early dinner, very early, like 5:30 p.m. And someone said, look over there, see. And it was Gwyneth Paltrow,
another big one.
Okay. She was very nice. I went to her table, see if everything was fine.
So the second question is, then do you acknowledge them? Do you come over as the owner, as the chef, and say, welcome?
Them on all my customers. I used to go to every single table. So people...
You're floating around anyway.
People next to them don't say, am I nobody?
Come
to my table. No, you're the same. You... Paul Robert, nice to see you again.
Have you met Gwyneth Paltrow? Gwyneth, how are you?
Yeah, let me tell you who's next to you.
Yeah. Gwyneth, have you met Paul Roberts here? I don't know if you've seen him on OC Talk Radio.
I heard about him.
I've heard the voice.
And one day the club sang, the owner, Patrice, said, Pascal, I have a special guest. I want to be more on the side. Because they don't want to be seen. Say, okay, this is Bono.
Bono?
Yeah.
U2, famous rock singer.
And I didn't even know who Bono
was. Okay, Mr. Bono.
1983, it was...
At the height of their fame, yeah.
Beginning of the
U2. Height. U2.
And, okay, we're fine. So it was very nice. And
there must be celebrities that come in like that you don't know who they are.
Yeah. Yeah,
and people say, don't you know who that is? That's one of the biggest rock singers in the world. No, I'm sorry, I don't know who he is.
And so now, and then I moved to California because I had a little, let's go to Hollywood. And
Was it that? We've never really talked about why leave Saint-Tropez? This is heaven.
Because the closest thing for me to the celebrity world is Los Angeles, Hollywood.
Still the mecca, still the center.
The French love that. And they're very attached to Hollywood. And even though you go to Hollywood, you don't see many of them. Or even if they live in Orange County,
it's hard to see celebrities. There aren't many places you can regularly go. The Polo Lounge used to be one. There are a couple places where they will gather and let it be known that they're going to be there. But most of it... You drive around Beverly Hills, you don't see anybody. You don't just see them out in the yard. Hey, that's Bono in his front yard.
You can go to the Mandarin, But here, after I moved to my restaurant, then I have all types of celebrity.
Can I tell you just quickly? I used to have an office right on Sunset. I had a couple offices right on Sunset. And so we used to go as a group to go eat at Hamburger Hamlet, which I don't know if it's still there. And it was a famous kind of just joint, and it was right next to a couple of big office towers, just before you enter Beverly Hills Formal, which everything stops, all the commercials stops right there. So it's right at the end of that Sunset Strip. And I saw more celebrities. People would always ask me, where do you see celebrities? At Hamburger Hamlet, I'd see people like Dustin Hoffman, and just on and on. And the other crazy one is, I'll tell you the other one, when I first got the job as an entertainment publicist, my boss takes me out, and he takes me to, I'm sure you've heard of this, Pink's Hot Dogs. I'm sure it's still there. the most famous
hot
dog stand on Melrose, I think it was. And just a little hot dog cart, and somehow it was famous, and everybody went there. And my boss is telling me, there's lots of celebrities that come to... I said, nobody comes to Pink's Hot Dog, just in the parking lot here and a thing. And he says, oh, yeah, like Robert Wagner comes here. And I start saying loudly, Robert Wagner wouldn't be caught dead at Pink's Hot Dog. And he makes a big smile, and the guy turns around in front of me and smiles, and it's Robert Wagner.
Yeah, he was on the break.
Yeah, exactly, because they would come over from the studio and they'd grab a hot dog.
Amazing.
But my boss is leading me to say that I'm looking like a fool. He would never be seen dead, and there he is right in front of me. I didn't even recognize
him. No, you feel like you're eating a million-dollar meal.
I felt like I was too tall, like a jerk.
No, so now I moved to Orange County and Newport Beach.
Why come down to Orange County? Because that, we've talked about this many times. This was a cultural wasteland. This was suburbia. This was endless fast food. There was no fine dining when you and a handful of other Bruno and some of your other pals and with Chanticleer.
Maybe inside me and you was an A and me.
Yeah, I mean, there were. You can count on one hand the number of fine dining restaurants here, and the Five Crowns or whatever.
I talked about that before when I heard the people used to say, oh, you don't have to cook real French. Nobody knows about anything about French cuisine.
No.
But
do French fries, that's all they
know. But this is actually connected to Club Saint-Consin.
Okay.
That's the reason I came here. Because one of my customers, client, and guest, used to own a little river boat company. And his son moved to the U.S., and opened up a little restaurant on Balboa Island. He knew that because my work in Saint-Tropez was seasonal. Okay,
it
was from Easter to the end of September. And then so in the winter, I had time to travel. So I said, hey, I will go visit him in the winter. I came and worked in that little restaurant, went back to France, and then one day they called me.
I didn't think you said travel. I thought you said trouble. That was your time for trouble. The winter.
Yeah. My troubled time is traveling. But so I went to that little restaurant called Paula, and I became a chef, and then suddenly I got my first newspaper or magazine article. I'll say, hey, maybe
they appreciate my
cuisine. Yeah. And so from that on, I went back to France. They called me back, said, we need you as a chef. And then never left.
I said, no way.
Yeah.
I knew restaurateurs in the 80s and 90s because I used to do some publicity for some bigger restaurants up in L.A. And they were curious, though there was money down here, but they didn't think there was a cultivated taste, that the people when they're down here just wanted beach food, fun food, simple food, fast food.
Actually,
there were a handful of places, Five Crowns, was if you wanted steak and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but
Chanticleer maybe.
Once again, even in the 60s, thing like that, you had a lot of Hollywood celebrities that were living on the coast.
They even, John Wayne lived down here. Yeah, Bogart lived down here.
They even built
Buddy Ibsen
their own villas on the coastline. And I've been to some houses that have been
But they wanted to be alone. So when they went out, it was to the shacks, to the Woody Shack over on the Coast Highway or something here.
And so they came down. And there was the weekend house, house.
You know? Right.
And so...
many years, always surprisingly, Malibu didn't have really fine dining. There were some good places, but there was an awful lot of just little local hangouts. I can't think of the real famous restaurants in L.A. were more like Sunset Strip, Beverly Hills, maybe downtown a few times, but it wasn't where they lived. It wasn't necessarily up the coast in Malibu.
Fortunately for them, the rich and famous, they have their own staff.
Yes, that's true too.
So they don't really have to go out every night. They have chef and servers.
And then somewhere along the way, in that 80s and 90s, you guys became celebrities. The TV shows and all the other stuff.
The Food Network just put the chef on the map.
And all these guys you knew, Michel Richard, Wolfgang Puck. I'm just thinking the ones I knew up in L.A. here that got Joaquin Splicale down here and stuff.
Jeremiah Town.
Yeah. And suddenly everybody was coming because their name was on the door to see them, to watch them cook. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to meet the chef. You were certainly a celebrity down here and still are down here. But
Joachim Spiegel with Patty Nagrou.
Yes.
And these guys are unbelievable. So go back to the people outside of just cooking. Because not only writers and movie stars and singers I serve, also I was below hub. For professional tennis players.
Professional tennis players?
Yeah, yeah.
That was your specialty. Okay, you served what they were serving.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were serving in the court, you're serving in the tennis. So name me some tennis players there.
One was really my regular, I still live in Orange County, and Roy Emerson.
Okay, I'm not a big tennis buff.
Very famous. So,
okay.
He's probably one who still on the top of the chart for the
greats.
Great.
Okay. I know very little about tennis, so I'll take your word for it.
Jim Courier.
Jim who?
Jim Courier.
Don't know. So you're going to name people. I don't even be unimpressed because I don't know them.
And a local one from Newport Beach, Lindsay Davenport.
That one I've heard of.
Yes.
Lindsay Davenport.
And one, you must know him. Bjorn Borg.
Oh, well, Bjorn Borg. Now, he was a celebrity, hung out with beautiful women and stuff.
Well, as a man, I have to say he was good-looking.
As a man, only the Frenchman would say, I have to say he's a good-looking. No, we would never say that. And we might think that.
With his bandana.
Yeah, he cut the figure, Bjorn Borg.
And actually, I have a little story.
All right.
With him. It was so nice.
A Bjorn Borg story. Just we went from Brigitte Bardot to Bjorn Borg.
Yes. And at the end, I visit the table and we talk and say, oh, my chef, why don't you sit down? We're going to play a game.
What?
I guess he loves games.
Okay.
No? And say, fine. And you know those little games, you put four or five, because at that time we still have matches.
Okay.
So from four or five matches, you have to build something.
Okay. All these silly bar games.
Yeah. And you're allowed to do only two or three moves.
Okay.
And I did it just like that.
Of course.
You look at me and say, first time someone do it so quickly. So
I Bjorn Borg was on our show years ago, and he told that story about you.
No. let's do it again.
Let's do it again. The takeaway is they're just like regular people, but it is something special. It puts a glow on the staff.
Yeah.
It makes you feel important that people who could eat anywhere and try anything have chosen your food, particularly if they come back. What about if they're difficult? People, because celebrities can be difficult and demanding, and some of them can be jerks. They're not all wonderful.
They're not jerks. They know what they want. And you do anything you can to give them what they want.
That's what you said. You actually said before we started the show, you appreciate demanding people.
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
It's like in sports. Hey,
got to up your game.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to be careful. If you push me on the corner of the tennis court, I'm going to send it back on your other corner.
Because some people, I could tell you many, we all tell the funny stories. I could tell you the not funny stories where you're like, oh my God, I don't want to work with that person ever again. Difficult, demanding, got to be the center of attention. There's some of that too. Those don't last. The ones that last are usually gracious. They are humble. They might have certain demands, but they don't make you feel bad. They don't yell at you.
No.
They don't say, hey, jerk, do you know who I am?
No, you just break the relationship
there. You're right. You've ruined it. And there are, I think, more today celebrities because they come up quickly and they go down quickly.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to be aggressive and gangster and tough and everything, and it's all about me and social media. I suspect, haven't met many young celebrities, but
celebrities, they know they've been lucky to become famous.
Absolutely.
Because it's such a hard place to succeed.
And they need your attention. The minute you don't care, the minute they turn everybody off, if you do it, I always said you could tell a celebrity by how they treat, and this isn't my quote, this is other people, I think this is the great Johnny Carson's quote, he would look and see how they treated other people on his staff. And if they were demanding or mean or put them down, he wouldn't have them back again.
No, I don't
need that. I don't want my staff to feel that way, and you're not that important to me.
Yes, exactly. So, actually, Jack Nicholson had some good scenes in a couple of movies where he judged a waitress, a server, and amazing. But another man that I cook for on a small catering, you remember Cliff?
Who?
Cliff.
Cliff?
Yes.
Cliff
from France.
Cliff from the show Cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah. John Ratzenberger.
John Ratzenberger.
Yeah.
Very nice guy.
He seemed like a nice guy. I never met him. Yeah, but
he was very nice.
And that is, people say, if they ever ask me questions, I'm happy like you to tell my celebrity stories. Because it was a special time in my life when I was rubbing shoulders with these people. Even though I was working for them, the better ones didn't make you feel like a servant. They made you feel like part of the team or whatever. Anyway, some of the celebrities I met were exactly in real life. At least they portrayed just what you saw on the screen. Some of them were the absolute opposite. They'd be so wonderful, and then off screen they're so mean and nasty and everything.
And I believe some of the famous ones, like Jack Nicholson, you could tell he was exactly the same.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's in
and those are the best. Those are the ones to me that last long, and they have a good reputation. Because if they're that way with you and me, they're also that way with the staff on the film or on the TV set. Yeah. If you're a jerk, people quickly start pushing you out. There's only so much tolerance. Talent, yes, gives you certain, you get away with certain things. Yeah. But and if you're famous and whatever, but by and large, doesn't you don't last. One way to end your career is to be a jerk to everybody on the way up, because you're going to see them on the way down.
Very nice too.
What's that?
Even play, because he's a big player. Even have in his home, he has an arcade and to play games, arcade game, you know.
What kind of game?
Arcade game.
Croquet, you mean?
Arcade. You play pinball, something like that.
Yeah.
No?
That's pinball, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, arcade games,
yes.
Okay.
Drew Carey,
okay. Never met Drew Carey.
And I played with him, spent some time. He was very... actually, very competitive. It was.
I know some people that knew Drew Carey, worked on his show. A friend of mine's wife was the set designer on that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a reputation for being a nice guy. Some of these people just build reputations for being a nice guy. Jimmy Stewart, certainly in the old days. I think Tom Hanks has that reputation. I've never met Tom Hanks, but yeah,
and
clearly.
And Jim Carrey, too.
Jim Carrey, okay.
Very nice, funny one.
I'll tell you the funny thing about the Jim Carrey. I don't know this to be Jim Carrey, but I one time casually met Robin Williams and at a restaurant, and he was not funny. I knew his publicist. In real life, he was very calm. On stage, he was frantic, manic, whatever. He was the opposite, they always said, in real life. He was very quiet, shy almost. Something about being at performing brought it out in him. But he didn't walk around. You expect him to do something zany, crazy all the time. He wasn't that way.
No,
I don't think.
This probably, he probably learned that at drama school.
Yeah, he could. He did go to the Yale Drama School.
Professional actor.
Yeah, he could turn it on. Something about this brought out a side in him that he was actually, in real life, pretty quiet. And
except when you laugh and smile. You cannot fake that.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey was very special.
We don't have time to go through all. These are just some of the celebrities Pascal's met. The celebrities he rubs shoulders with. Celebrity chefs.
Oh,
celebrity actors.
Can I talk about some politic people?
No, another show. Who do you just real quick?
Okay.
Give us some quick
George Bush Jr.
George Bush Jr., of
very
course.
Very nice. A great time. And Elon Musk.
Elon Musk?
Yes.
When did you meet Elon Musk?
Cook was a political dinner, and then him and I did a little speech, and we were next to each other. And
what a name dropper.
We exchanged a few words.
What a name dropper. This all started because when I met Pascal, he casually told me he once served Brigitte Bardot. He just worked that into the conversation sometime. And since then, I've been waiting to hear the stories of Brigitte Bardot. We mourn her passing. We celebrate her life. This is like an Irish wake. We're laughing and telling stories afterwards here.
And thank you, Brigitte, because she actually put the French movie industry, French movie celebrities on the map.
She did.
And is part of the French culture.
Part of the French culture, really was. She exported the whole, everything French was cool and chic because of Brigitte.
One more thing.
All right.
Brigitte Bardot.
Yes.
She has a foundation.
Oh, yes, let's give that
very
out.
Very important.
Because her work continues with animals, and we'd like to...
Because she's a big animal activist, and so it's the foundation, Foundation Brigitte Bardot. And you can send...
In honor of her memory, in honor of the smile she put on everybody's face and the work she did on screen and off screen, we want to honor the great Brigitte Bardot. Too many people today, too quickly we forget celebrities from 20, 30 years ago. She was an icon like Marilyn Monroe and a national treasure in France.
The foundation is still going, and so you can make donation and save... Rescue animals.
And help animals. Good cause. My mother would be happy to hear that.
And elephants and all that on the protection of fishing. She was
Brigitte Bardot. I invited the chef to come on today. We had no guests. I said, I want to hear Brigitte Bardot. And he said, well, I have many celebrities. I said, we'll talk about all that, what it's like to serve celebrities. And it certainly can put a restaurant on the map if people see celebrities there. But you have to handle it like the real people. You have to be willing to handle the challenges that come with it. And don't just cash in on it and take their picture and run and tell the paper that Brigitte Bardot was here.
And not many celebrities have a legacy. So this is a legacy. The foundation Brigitte Bardot, that's our legacy.
Too many celebrities are instant celebrities, and so they go up and they come down rather quickly here. But there were, in those days, I'm going to date myself, I'm an old crabby guy, we had celebrities, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, all these ones that you rattle off here. Today, I don't know, today's celebrity would be tomorrow's footnote or forgotten personality. They come up so fast and they're so few to me that are really worthy of that star image. But those were stars that you rattled off here. And you're a star. You're a superstar here in Orange County. We're privileged to have you with us here and to share these stories. Really, it's a kick to hear who you met and who you know.
Hopefully all this will be part of my cookbook with one day.
We're writing the cookbook as we speak here. Yes. We're talking it out here.
Right.
We're going to get all of it. Thank you so much, Chef Pascal, for sharing your memories. How many people in Orange County can say they met Brigitte and served Brigitte Bardot? Nobody except Chef Pascal. Thanks for joining us here today.
You're welcome.
We do so much more on this show. We really do talk about what it takes to start a kitchen and run a kitchen and to be in the business today, harder than ever, with more opportunities in some ways than ever. But I still got to take a chance once in a while and talk about the stories, as we have a storied chef here behind the kitchen doors. Thanks for joining us. Join us as we'll share some more stories coming up right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center.